Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. We're talking today with Steve Forrester, former editor and publisher of The Historian, and the former president and CEO of the family company EO Media Group, with its 24 newspapers and magazines across Oregon and Washington. As of November 1st, EO Media Group was sold to the larger Carpenter Media Group, which operates more than 160 publications. The sale included The Historian. Steve Forrester, welcome, and on behalf of KMUN, let me thank you for your support of KMUN and the Daily Historian's support of KMUN over the years.
Yeah, yes, it's long been a partner of the paper.
So I'd like to take us back, I mean way back, to July 1st, 1873. And as I recall reading, a local person whose last name will be familiar, Van Dusen, Adam Van Dusen, invited a man named D.C. Ireland.
DeWitt Clinton Ireland.
To come to Astoria because he felt like Astoria needed a newspaper, needed a good newspaper at that time. So he did, and he came, and he started up what was at first the tri-weekly Astorian. And then, I guess, as now, you know, newspaper business was up and down. And I understand what he did for a while when it was down and things didn't take off right away. He started printing salmon can labels to stay afloat, and with all the canneries in this area.
Yeah.
What a brilliant move.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And yeah. Well, his story is in our book, Grit and Ink, which is the story of our company starting then, well before our family ownership, which began in 1908. That's when my grandfather and his partner bought the Astorian. Mm-hmm. They had the East Oregonian in Pendleton.
So that was one of my questions. Your family's ownership of the Astorian started way back in 1908.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you arrived here, what was it, in
87.
87. And at that time...
my father had been an editor.
Right. And before that, your brother, right?
Right.
For a couple of years, and then your
briefly,
dad.
Briefly, yeah.
And then you came in 87, and when did you take over as editor? And
88.
88, the following year.
Yeah.
So at that time, your family owned the Astorian plus what, two other papers? At that time, it was a smaller company, I think.
It was more like four by then, I think.
Okay.
But it ended up, when we sold, some 14 titles.
So the other papers mostly were in Eastern Oregon, weren't they?
They were until we purchased Bend Bulletin and the Medford, and started up again the Medford Mail Tribune.
Mm-hmm. And thus, the name of your company was the Eastern Oregon Media Group, and then it became the EO Media Group.
Yeah.
So newspapering is kind of in your genes. I mean, your family has been in this
long time.
For a long, long time.
Certainly.
Did you ever consider doing anything else?
Well, like lots of foolish young men in my 20s, I considered running for the state legislature. That never happened. I had run a guy's campaign in Portland, a city council campaign, part of it.
And before you came to Astoria, were you already starting to work in the newspaper business? And what are some of the things that you did then?
Well, immediately prior, I'd spent 10 years in Washington, D.C. as a correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a guy's correspondence for a Pacific Northwest newspapers in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, I started a newsletter, a biweekly newsletter, and also then a radio show. That's where I got my radio fascination.
Now, as I recall, you were involved also in kicking off Willamette Week, weren't you?
Right. I was one of the five founders, which is now 50 years old. They're going to have their reunion, their 50-year reunion this Saturday in Portland.
And that was before you came to the Astorian or after?
Oh, yeah. That was before.
So you had all of that under your belt, and then you came here and became editor of the Astorian.
Yeah.
You were editor for about 30 years, I think.
That's right. 33, I think. 33, yeah.
And retired in 2018. What are some of the memories that stick out to you over that period of time?
There's a bundle of them under the heading of the human comedy that is Astoria. I mean, if you have a good sense of humor, this town will show you a lot of antics. I'll say that put it that way. It's a town full of characters. There are three of us, John Gutenberger, Barbara Hansel, and I, for quite a while, shared our fondness for great characters of this town. And believe me, John Gutenberger knows them, knew who they were. But at the same time, it's a very reliable source of news, this town is. Our late predecessor, Fred Andrus, who was publisher of the paper, he used to say that all you had to do in Astoria was open the window and news would flow in. And the windows don't open anymore, but it's still kind of true.
Well, not all of your memories are going to be specifically about the newspaper, because you were involved in the community as well. And I imagine the Liberty Theater looms fairly large in your memory book.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The great thing we did for the Liberty, well, two or three great things. But one was that my assistant named Michelle Tilla became essentially the administrative secretary of the theater when it was a nonprofit just starting out, which was significant because we paid her to do her job. And so she did all of the collating and such of grant applications, set up meetings, lunches, the whole thing. And so that was very important.
So you were covering the administrative expenses initially for them.
Oh, we were.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we gave as a company as well, back when newspapers had that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave handsomely. And my whole family gave. So we organized the effort, and it got going. Yeah.
Well, another thing I'm familiar with that you have done is you've given a lot of young reporters a kind of a kickstart into the business, and have taught and let them get their legs under them here.
Yeah.
I think when I first came here 30-some years ago, a young woman named Zaz Hollander was covering local government.
Yeah. We used to joke about that because I insisted she become C.V. Hollander, which was her name, which she hated her name, which was Cornelia. Cornelia V. Hollander. Yeah, Zaz was, she was good. She was really good.
And so have been many others who followed her and up through to this day. And, you know, we have one of your alums
here,
working here at KDOS.
Katie Frankowitz.
Katie is news director.
Who was Katie Wilson.
So that has gone on as well.
Well, just further on that subject, Roger, when I did retire, I counted up how many reporters had gone through that newsroom. And while I was there, and it was some 80 plus reporters.
Mm-hmm. That's an astounding number.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And your company had a couple hundred employees, didn't it, all told?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a huge alumni association of young journalists. And then going back even further, I'm right now, I have been, I've written a biography of the late Senator Richard Neuberger of Oregon. It's going to publish this fall, but one of the many people I cite as a source for what he wrote at the time, because he's dead now, was a man named Bob Lucas, Robert Lucas. He started here, and he later became editor of the Denver Post, and was an authoritative voice on Western politics. And our Dewey Rand, much older, of course, at the Capitol Press, is also cited as a very important source in that story.
Mm.
So it's interesting where they all come around.
Well, I mentioned when we started that the man who started D.C. Ireland, who started The Astorian here, had to do a little hustling to get by the rough times by printing labels for salmon cans. And things have gotten worse rather than better for the newspaper industry writ large.
Mm.
Can you talk at all about some of the reasons? What happened? I mean, sometime in the past, communities used to have maybe a thriving paper. There might be two papers or three papers in some larger communities.
Yeah.
And all over the country, that has just shrunk and shrunk and shrunk and shrunk.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lost a lot in the process. You know, my background was in broadcast. But I understand the importance of newspapers at the same time, because broadcast is not doing the same things.
No.
Newspapers, they're the people who are covering local city council meetings, local county commission meetings,
right.
local school boards, local lots of things that otherwise would go unnoticed. And in many communities now, that's what's happening.
Yeah. No, it really is. Yeah, it's way too bad. Yeah, all I can say, I never went to the seminars, workshops, conventions to learn about all that stuff. I just did what we could do to survive. I didn't pretend to be an authority on what was going on with other papers. But I will say, I wrote an essay, 30 years ago, I suppose, and I enunciated three or four basic principles. And the one is ownership is everything. Whoever owns the paper, they get what they want. They get what they ask for. Now, we've sold to the Carpenter Media Group, and all indications are that they're going to not gut the paper in the way that, or any of our papers, in the ways that has happened in Eugene, for instance, where the Gatehouse Media, along with Gannett, have owned, I don't know who owns it now, but essentially they are what I call strip miners.
Mm-hmm.
And they pared that newsroom down to nothing almost, which is unconscionable, I would say. But there it is. But, we'll see how it goes. But all of which is to say, I think everybody's looking for a new model. And one model that we put a lot of hope in, but didn't pan out, is the nonprofit model.
Mm-hmm.
There is a group called the National Trust for Local News. And we waited, I'd say, for 7 months for them to get serious about buying our newspapers, mm-hmm. because we were made to order for what their ambition is, I should say. And they didn't produce. We tried to show them the way to Oregon philanthropy, to raise the money to do it, and they just didn't follow through. But it's what a lot of people are looking for, is for philanthropy to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nonprofit does not mean you don't have to make a profit. You do. You have to make a positive cash flow.
Right.
Anybody in the nonprofit, any theater manager will tell you that.
Any local community radio station.
Exactly. You got to have coming in to cover what goes out.
Cover your expenses, yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. But it seems, in theory, that seems to work with papers, but we've not seen it play out in large numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It has played out, but not largely.
Well, I guess some of the things I've read about that really put a crimp in newspapers' ability to make money were just changes in our culture, like classified advertising used to be a backbone of newspapers.
And it's gone to Craigslist.
Yeah, and if you wanted to sell something or buy something, mm-hmm. the first place you would look is what was in your local newspaper.
The only place that now works in our company was the Capital Press, which is an regional agricultural newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And that paper's classified advertising still remains strong. You're selling very specified items there in a regional market.
So there aren't too many earth movers being sold on Craigslist, in other words, or tractors.
Something like that, yeah. Well, increasingly, newspapers do live on circulation.
Mm-hmm.
They've upped the price again and again. Back to, what caused the decline,
mm-hmm.
Is also, the Googles of the world and so forth, who take their cut out of our skin, so to speak, and don't pay back. But people are reading, in many cases, reading stories out of our newspaper without paying for it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
So they don't need to subscribe. They can find it online.
Yeah. And people have the misconception that we don't need their money. I've two or three times observed a certain guy at the co-op, I've never stopped to engage him, but who likes to read our paper out of their sales stand and then put it back. I'm tempted to say, do you do that with the fruit here? You take a bite out of it first and then put it back. Anyway.
So another one of our town's characters that you referred to earlier, I guess.
Yeah.
On a personal basis, since your family was so heavily involved for so long, you and I know you and your brother Mike and a cousin, Catherine Brown, were the principals in EO Media Group. That had to be a huge decision to actually change, to sell.
Oh, it was. One clarification, my brother is not active at all. Mm-hmm. He's in band with Parkinson's.
Ah.
So it's really my cousin, my daughter, Susan, who grew up here and went to high school here, mm-hmm. and I who made the decision. And it was very simple. It was, we had reached the point where we could see we had to sell. So, and that's when we began to look at the National Trust in seriousness, mm-hmm. as a serious thing. And then we engaged a broker to find us buyers, and she did. And without going too far into the details of things, we had four different companies interested in our papers and so forth.
I'm guessing you have some hopes for what happens in the future with The Historian. The Historian is more than just a newspaper to you. It's we've been part of your life. What is your hope for what will happen with the new company? What do you think could happen?
Very simply, that they'll continue to employ quality reporters and cover the news.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, so far, just seeing what's coming out, it looks very, very much like what it has been.
Yeah.
And I guess the hope is that will continue. By most of us, I know there are always, with any newspaper, often based on whatever the editorial philosophy is, there are some people who hate the darn paper and are never going to subscribe to it. Or,
well, I have a very humorous story along those lines. After I had retired 33 years. I'd retired way before we sold it,
mm-hmm.
and I was I'd retired, and I was not in the paper anymore. And I was walking through Safeway. And it was right about the meat or coffee department, I guess I'd say. And this woman, older woman, looked at me. She clearly recognized me. And she said, when you wrote that column, Cabbages and Kings, she said, I always resented it. I never liked it. And now that you're gone, I miss it.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
So,
well, that's only one of the things that you initiated here. You made changes in the paper over the time you were here. You added things.
Yeah, I added a Coast Weekend, mm-hmm. and our Coast Magazine, and Water Under the Bridge, and Everyday People, some things like that. And amusingly, we did, while I was there, I don't know how many series on daycare, child care. And we did our first, after we'd been living here a few months, for obvious reasons. We knew a lot about it, what it was and what it wasn't, mm-hmm. here. And of course, child care is of the sort, or it's a topic that is always there.
Right.
Yeah. You may grow out of parenthood, but others are entering it, and so on and so forth. So it's a topic we'll be talking about forever.
It's still a huge issue for people in this community.
Well, and anyone anywhere with children, it's the key to everything, mm-hmm. and lots of things. Because if you don't have childcare, life changes for you.
Well, will you and Brenda continue to live in Astoria now that you have retired? And
that's our plan. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. She's quite involved with the, especially with the Grace Episcopal Church food pantry,
mm-hmm.
and so forth, which itself, as you would imagine, is quite a indicator of what's going on around here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned child care as being an issue that the paper has covered in some depth. What are some of the other things that might stick out in your mind?
Oh, well, the biggest thing was our year-long series on climate change,
mm-hmm.
in which we involved all of our newspapers. And Patrick Webb pulled that all together, really made it happen. and went with me back east when we won a national award, the Grantham Award for environmental reporting. So, which was quite remarkable for papers our size to get that. We were very beholden to a guy named David Boardman, who was vice president of the Seattle Times, and really clearly cleared the decks for us to win that.
And there are some many big things that have happened here during your tenure. You know, the port has often struggled.
Not now, but boy.
It's doing better.
Yeah, it's doing better.
And there was the long battle over over LNG in the community.
Oh, yeah. No, there were sort of quasi, you might say, global forces surrounding all that whole LNG matter, and a lot of money.
Well, my wife and I have been subscribers since a few years before we moved here 30-some years ago. And I have to say the paper was a factor in us moving here in one funny sense. I was looking reading it one day, and, you know, on page 2, there's always the police blotter, stuff that's happened. And one day I looked at it, and there were two items on the police blotter. The one item was that someone's dog was menacing a pig. The other item was that a woman complained that she had left pudding cooling on her windowsill and someone had stolen it. And I thought, that's a place I want to live, or that's the crime that gets into the newspaper. So.
Right. The Chinook Observer has said an even better one. The all-time police blotter was the Arcata, California. And they've even put a book together of this guy's police blotter, because on occasion he would do them in poetry or even in haiku. And my favorite one had to do with the cow who it said, car comes around corner, hits cow, cow wins. Nice guy, nice haiku.
Well, I've been asking you about The Historian, but EO Media Group also owned the newspapers in Seaside and so on and around the community. And what's happening with those, I guess?
They exist. Seaside does, and Chinook. Mm-hmm. Chinook is a very robust newspaper.
So the new company will continue with them as well? Is that, or are they?
Let's make them money.
Okay. Well, what have I forgotten to ask you that you'd like people to know about you or about The Historian or about the new company?
Well, I had the good fortune of being editor during a decade of really phenomenal, I don't know what you'd call it, blossoming here in Astoria. Mm-hmm. Betsy Johnson used to call it the Astoria Renaissance. And the Liberty had a lot to do with that, of course. But people forget that after that, then the Elliott Hotel suddenly came back.
Right.
And the Mill Pond happened. And Paul Benoit, the community director, development director, you know, inch by inch, created the Riverwalk.
Right.
And all of those things happened in a fairly compact period of time. And for those of us who got here, I think when you got here, and certainly when we got here, you know, there were a paltry number of restaurants, for instance. And
12 by our count when we first came here.
Yeah.
12, and now they're...
And they have the same variety.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think Rich Fensack, who was in Costa Weekend as the mouth of the Columbia, had something to do that in the sense that we all need an audience. Mm-hmm. Every art form needs an audience. And chefs are no different than violinists. They need someone saying how good they are. And that's what he did for the restaurant industry here. He really observed them very correctly and encouraged those, you know, who were here and so on and so forth. So it was funny. It's already the town has moved on, or I shouldn't say moved on, it's still here, but it's developing again with a whole new set of things, the development at the hospital and at a new hospital, and the development at the Maritime Museum, for instance, and more hotels, I gather. and so forth. The restaurant thing, as we all know, has hit a bump in the road with Carruthers and such others, but it will continue to attract new chefs, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, Carruthers is back up and running now, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets Flyward mixed reviews, I'm told. I've been in there, but I'm told that. But, you know, places like Daphne is a stunner.
Sure.
So,
and the place where Charlie's Steakhouse was.
I've heard that.
Is now quite good as well. So
I've heard that.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right about the Renaissance, and Paul Benoit played such a key role mm-hmm. in that I think we ought to be naming things after Paul. It's a little early for a memorial because he's back in town now and he's alive and kicking.
Yes.
But he just, and you, as you say, inch by inch, kept at that and kept at that until he got it done. And it was huge, getting the soil cleaned up where the mill pond development mm-hmm. is now, was an enormous feat, getting the railroad to let go of the right-of-way.
And my father had a role in that.
Did he?
Yeah. Paul went to see him. My father had just gotten here, and most of the guys my father's age were turning a cold shoulder to Paul's idea, because they're, well, you got to get the railroad. No, you'll never get the railroad. Well, my father, I don't know how he did it, but he forged a relationship with the president of Burlington Northern. And whose name will come to me in a minute, at any rate. And so the guy, he liked to come here and fish, do salmon fishing on a charter. So after we got here, we went along on these trips. And my dad was able to play a role in Dick Bressler, that was his name, Dick Bressler, in having Burlington Northern grant Astoria, to make a deal on the rails going through town.
It's interesting how things happen and all the pieces in play.
Yeah, Paul could tell you more about that whole end of the story.
Of course, all the Renaissance leaves us with new things to figure out now, because now we are at a point where we've become popular.
Yeah.
And now we have to figure out how to have housing for our workforce. And that's going to be a huge thing going forward.
Yeah. No, it is absolutely. And it's, when we got here, that was Cannon Beach's problem.
Absolutely.
And now it's Astoria's
and
as well.
It's our problem. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Steve Forrester, thank you very much for coming and talking with
us. You're welcome. A pleasure.
And I wish you and Brenda just the absolute best going forward.
Thank you. And look for my book in the fall.
All right. It's being published by the
Oregon State
Oregon.
University Press.
OSU
Press, yeah.
And the title again?
Ahead of His Time, Richard Neuberger and the Decade That Changed Oregon.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Steve.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We've been talking with Steve Forrester about the history of the Astoria newspaper and its sale, along with the rest of the EO Media Group, to the larger Carpenter Media Group. Thank you for listening. I'm Roger Rocca, and this is The Human Beat.